History tells the story of the world and of our lives. Sometimes that history goes bump in the night. Broadcasting from the Center of Oddity and the Supernatural in Central Florida, it's the History Goes Bump podcast.
Hello, you spectacular people. Welcome to History Goes Bump Redux. I'm your host, Diane.
And this is Kelly.
Kelly, on this episode, we're going to go to a location in Arizona in Bisbee. This is the Oliver House.
Looking forward to it.
This is a great bed and breakfast. Sounds like a fabulous place to stay. Are you ready to go back?
I'm ready. The Oliver House is located in Bisbee, Arizona, a quaint town with a historic mining background. As is the case with most mining towns, this town has a rich history with gambling, prostitution, and murder taking center stage. The Bisbee of the modern era may have quieted considerably, but the unseen world has not stopped kicking up its heels. Long-dead residents still seem to be hanging around, and one of their favorite places to knock about is the Oliver House.
Mines. They're like caves, digging down into the earth, pounding the earth, taking from the earth. Does anyone wonder if the Earth sometimes gets angry about that? And caves. Have we met a cave that doesn't have some kind of weird legend or haunting going on with it? There are so many stories of weird things happening in caves. So it's not surprising if you have towns that are built upon the mining industry that you would get some hauntings going on in them. Bisbee, Arizona was known as the Queen of the Copper Mines and gets its name from Judge DeWitt Bisbee, who financed the Copper Queen Mine. The city lies in the Mule Mountains and initially started as a stake claim. In 1877, Army scouts and cavalrymen were sent to the Mule Mountains to investigate whether there were any Apache in the area. What they found instead of Apache were mineral deposits like lead, copper, and silver. The town grew with the influx of prospectors. On January 9, 1902, the city of Bisbee received its official charter. By 1910, 25,000 people lived in the city. As usually happens when mining operations close up due to no more ore being found, the town went through a slump in the 1970s as people moved out and the housing market crashed. The town today has revived as a retiree and artist mecca. And a lot of people like to come here as tourists as well.
Nice! Oliver House was built as an office building and boarding house for mining executives by Edith Ann Oliver, who was the wife of Henry W. Oliver. Henry was an Irish-born American industrialist. His family emigrated to Pennsylvania when he was two. He served in the Civil War in 1861, and when he came home, he married Edith Cassidy in 1862, and they had one daughter. The following year, he formed a partnership with two other men, and they opened a company that specialized in making nuts and bolts. The company flourished and incorporated in 1888 as the Oliver Iron and Steel Company. Henry was considered an iron pioneer, who innovated better processes for making steel and designed better blast furnaces. Oliver also helped to bring in new railroad routes to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He died in 1904, and Edith moved to Arizona, where she had Oliver House built in 1909. It served the Calumet and Arizona Mining Company. Edith chose to build the house with red bricks to help prevent its destruction by fire because Bisbee was a town that had many fires.
Oliver House was purchased in 1986 by Dennis Schranz. He ran the place until 2005 and sold it to Patty Hill, and then a woman named Trish owned the property. The bed and breakfast has been under new ownership and management since June of 2023. The Oliver House features 14 rooms with most of its original rustic charm. Each of the rooms has a certain theme, and names like the Blue Room, Peach Pit, Chili Pepper, and Plum Parlor.
Peach Pit reminds me of 90210.
Oh, that's true. The building has an ugly history, though, with as many as 27 deaths tied to the boarding house. Most of these cannot be verified because historical documents were destroyed by fires. So it certainly didn't help that she had a red brick building. One story that can be verified is that of Nat Anderson, because his murder was covered by the tombstone epitaph, and it reads as follows. Bisbee, February 25th, 1920. The investigation of the murder of Nat Anderson early Sunday morning has come practically to a standstill. Every clue that has presented itself to the police has been run down. On the evening prior to the murder, Anderson was at a party at the home of Mrs. Norris Greeley in Wood Canyon. It was a simple social affair among friends, cards and dancing being the principal entertainment. Shortly before 1 o'clock, the guests left the house in a crowd, proceeding a short distance together. When they separated, Anderson escorted Mrs. Elizabeth King to her home on Tempe Avenue. He entered the house and talked with her for a few minutes, leaving at about 2:25 o'clock. He then went to the English Kitchen on Main Street and ate a light supper. Anderson left the English Kitchen shortly after 2:30 o'clock and presumably went directly to the Oliver House where he rooms. It is but a few minutes' walk. The shooting occurred at 3:10 o'clock. An inquest yesterday morning shed little or no light on the murder. The coroner's jury gave a verdict of death, quote, from gunshot wounds at the hands of an unknown person. Following the shooting, both Mrs. Richard Davis, the landlady, and a roomer saw a man leaving the place. They did not see him clearly enough to describe him. The theft of money and a watch from Kay Ross's room a short time prior to the shooting remains a puzzling feature of the crime. The weight of evidence against the theory that the man who entered Ross's room is the same man that shot Anderson is almost overwhelming. On the other hand, everything points to the crime as being the act of a man who had some personal score to settle with Anderson, a score of violent hatred. Before firing the third shot into the prostrate man's back, his assailant cursed him with a vile epitaph. There is a wooden footbridge across the canyon leading to the front of the house. A nearby neighbor said that before the shooting, a scuffle was heard on this bridge and a woman screamed. The police think that the robbery of Kay Ross's room might have been a coincidence or might have been done with the object of throwing them off the trail to make it seem as if this was an act of common thieves trying to escape.
The murder remained a mystery, with subsequent newspaper articles revealing that the police had little to go on and weren't able to charge anyone. Most people believe that Nat Anderson was having an affair with a married woman, and apparently Nat owed his mistress's husband money as well.
Well, that's fabulous. You took a loan from the guy and his wife.
Ruh-roh. When the husband found out about the affair, he went to Oliver House and shot Nat in the back and in the head outside of room 13.
Lucky number 13.
Oliver House seemed to attract those who were adulterous. In the 1930s, the sheriff's wife had taken up with a young suitor, and one day while they were at Oliver House in the Blue Room, the sheriff came in and shot both the young man and his wife before turning his gun on himself and committing suicide. The story is often referred to as a massacre, with some narratives, including other patrons at the hotel, being shot.
When Dennis Schranz bought the property, he was a complete skeptic when it came to the paranormal. Strange activity began his first night in the hotel. The Blue Room had disembodied voices, and he heard furniture moving around in there. Guests reported activity as well. One room had been called the Grandma Room because an elderly woman had passed away in it. Her apparition had been seen in there at times rocking in a rocking chair, and a broken clock in the room would chime at 2 a.m. Dennis removed the chair and renamed the room, and this seemed to anger the elderly ghost, and in retaliation, she bopped a 3-year-old boy on the head while he slept in the room.
Well, that's rude.
Yeah, I know.
What, not very grandmotherly.
I know, he's a little 3-year-old kid. He ran to his parents crying, but they did not believe his story. Until the next morning, when a dark bruise appeared on his forehead.
Aw, poor little man.
And of course, they probably were really trying to explain it away, going, well, maybe he just hit his head on the headboard or something else. Maybe he fell out of bed and we just didn't hear him. But yeah, I'm like, hey, Grandma, why don't you go after the parents instead of the little kid?
Little kid's going, Granny smacked me.
Or how about the guy who changed the name of the room and took away your chair? Go after Dennis.
No kidding.
Picking on a little three-year-old.
Leslie wrote a Google review in 2018. It always seems like a good idea to stay in a haunted house. Until at 2 a.m. you wake to find an old lady ghost standing next to you, staring at you while you try to sleep.
Yeah, that's a little disconcerting, but I love how she starts it. It always seems like a good idea to stay in a haunted house. Now, for us, yes, but for most people, I would say they probably are saying, no, that's not a good idea.
They go on to say, crazy haunted. Lots of different spirits there. Many different ones in the hall as well. Didn't sleep well at all and glad to leave after one night. The room was fine. The breakfast was fine. The ghosts were kind of pissed we were there.
Sounds like it. I mean, she had a ton of activity, and most people who stay here, I mean, I read a ton of Google reviews. This was the only one that had any ghosts connected to it. Everybody else was like, great place, great food, love the dogs that are there. Everything was fabulous, except for her. It's like they all decided they're going to go after Leslie.
Maybe she deserved it.
I was like, what did you say before you went into your room? Did you say something about, well, this is great. This is a haunted house. Leave me alone. And so they went, let's pick on her. But yeah, I mean, she wakes up, sees a full-bodied apparition, and then apparently she must have heard some creaking out in the hallway, as she's saying there were many different ones out in the hall, too. And now a little break for a word about one of our sponsors.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcast FREE.
Guests claim that the second floor is the most active area. Doors often open and close on their own, and the lights turn on and off without visible assistance. There have been times when people staying overnight have complained the next morning about the noise from parties, only to find out that there were no parties going on in the inn. You could see them getting up and wanting to go, you know, should I go next door? Do I need to go downstairs to tell these people to quiet it up? And then either the next morning they report it, or they go right then when they hear it at night to tell the people to, you know, shut up. And they find out there's no party anywhere.
Noise complaint.
The plum room features cold spots that border on freezing. That sounds hellish to me. Do you like what I did there? A little ironic?
A little bit.
And in the purple sage room, the windows, shutters, and doors all open and close on their own. Entity Voices paranormal investigators caught some interesting EVP that included come back, get out, and a really creepy, drawn-out help me. First, I'm going to play come back. I'll play it again. Here's get out. I'll play that again. And then here's that really creepy, drawn out, help me. And I'll play it again.
Renee Harper is a ghost tour guide in Bisbee, and she wrote the 2010 book, Southern Arizona's Most Haunted. In it, she recounts a story connected to the spirit of Nat Anderson. We have a town radio station in Bisbee called KPRP. There's a story of one of our local DJs whose friend bet him $100 to spend the night in Nat's room. The DJ took the bet thinking he was going to make a quick $100. He did not believe in ghosts and was the ultimate skeptic. He checked in, unlocked the door to room 13, opened it, and saw a full-bodied apparition standing in front of him. He got so scared that he immediately shut the door, checked out, and gave his friend the money, stating that he now believed in ghosts.
So I'm thinking the friend must have had a deal with the spirit of Ned Anderson. I don't know what the deal was, but
perhaps
because you can't really use money in the afterlife. So he couldn't have said, hey, I'll split the $100 with you, dude. But yeah, immediately you walk in that room and it's like, there's somebody standing here. And I'm assuming it was not maybe completely full bodied. And that's how he could tell that it was a ghost rather than being like, hey, what are you doing in my room? You think there'd be some kind of conversation there. But since he immediately turned around and was like, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm guessing it didn't look like a corporeal person.
It must have been a little, it was a little transparent. See-through.
One woman on TripAdvisor wrote of her experience at Oliver House. My family is sort of scared of the house because first, it's creepy when you walk up to it. And second, it's really dark inside. Plus, I've had two different times of unexplained things happen to me. I've listened to a woman at 2 a.m. softly singing a song while walking down the hallway and stopping at my door to shake the doorknob. The other of an old man ghost cutting in front of me while I turned around, taking my breath away. Of course, the house is old with its moans and groans of almost 100-year history.
I love how she ends it with, yeah, there's some moans and groans, so I'm assuming there's some creaks and things like that. But I'm like, excuse me, but you've just talked about two apparitions that you've interacted with.
Right.
The creaking of floors would not bother me in the least after that. And another family reported, the rooms are old boarding house fare and have large old wooden doors with gaps at the bottom and dormer windows above for air circulation. The floors are wood plank and look original with scarring and all. So when we heard the clunking of boots going down the hall and up the stairs, we weren't surprised. About the third time, though, we were a little annoyed, and my wife asked me to check it out and see if the stomper could be a little quieter. As I heard the steps come down the hall again and watched the shadows of someone walking by, I got out of bed and went to the door. I opened the door and looked to the right in the direction the person had traveled. Seeing no one, I stepped out of the door and turned right past the last room on the floor and turned up the stairs, still following the footsteps. I rounded the landing at the midway point up the stairs, continued up to the top floor, and turned left, knowing I was right behind the stomper. Just as I rounded the corner and looked down the long hallway, the steps stopped. There was no one in front of me. No doors opened or closed, and no lights came on. I went back to the room and had to explain this to my wife. The rest of the night, I barely slept. I waited for the steps to come back so I could catch the stomper. The rest of the night, we heard very few sounds except for a few murmurs and what sounded like a heavy chain being dropped on the floor next to the nightstand by our bed. Except for that really loud chain noise.
Yeah, right?
In the world. That did make us jump. As a side note, Ghost Adventures, the TV show, was there doing an investigation a couple of years later, and one of the guys experienced the same chain sound in the same room, and they caught it on tape. So that is an interesting backup to that story, and it does make you wonder. I didn't watch this, so I don't know. Is it the sound of, like, are we talking about little chain, a bigger piece of chaining? I mean, what kind of chain? Can we describe that a
little
bit
more? Are we talking
about
anchor chain?
Yeah. And why there would be chain in a boarding room unless it's just something that a miner had on him from working in the mines and he just dropped it on the floor.
While Ghost Adventures was at the location, they caught a few EVPs, one of which was a very creepy scream. A disembodied laugh was captured as well, and cold spots along with touching were felt. A guest book at the Bed and Breakfast is filled with countless stories of haunting experiences. People claim to see a shadow figure near room 13, and running water is heard. Occasionally, the sound of someone working on pipes is heard as well. Gunshot or firecracker sounds are also heard.
Yeah, it's really interesting, that sound of someone working on the pipes. It's like, why would that be there? I mean, it's probably residual in nature since multiple people have described it.
The only thing is, old piping can make pings and pangs of sound.
That's what I'm wondering. If people are just hearing some of the old pipe work doing something. Cause
as it heats up or cools down.
It just seems like a really weird residual haunting sound. Like, what would be the point of pipes being worked on, like, unless a plumber had a heart attack while he was working on the pipes or something.
Goodness.
That room number 13 sounds like it's probably the creepiest room, but almost anything in this place could probably get you. Have the previous patrons of Oliver House decided to book eternal stays? Are the spirits of the murdered still hanging around the halls? Is Oliver House haunted?
That is for you to decide.
Bisbee's got several haunted locations there, so I think the Copper Queen Mine, there's actually a hotel named the Copper Queen, I believe, as well. And there's a couple other places. So definitely a town to check out. It looks gorgeous. It's got mountains around it. And the Oliver House, a lot of the reviews that people left said that the view of the town and the mountains is just gorgeous from almost any room.
Road trip.
Road trip indeed. They're most busy in the winter. So if you want to go at a less busy time, although it will be hotter than Hades, summer would be the best.
It's a dry heat.
And they embrace their hauntings here as well. They mention it on their website.
Excellent.
And Bisbee does have the ghost tour that's been going on there for well over a decade, which is hosted by the woman who wrote that book about the old Southern Arizona haunts or what have you. And she also wrote a book more recently about haunted Arizona.
Very nice.
Want to thank you guys for joining us on this Redux. I've been your host, Diane.
And this has been Kelly.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.